And welcome to the audio show here at MMATorch.com. Go to the forum, leave a comment, please. And also, Twitter.com. No, wait, not. We're on Twitter at audio show.
There
right?
you go.
All right.
That's it.
And Twitter at MMATorch.
I am Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. All right, let's just get right into it with our overview of Strike Force Evolution. Where do you guys want to start?
I thought it was a pretty decent card. Let's start at the top. Main All event.
Right. Had fun. All right. Scott Smith taking out Kung Lee in the in 3 minutes and 25 seconds of the third round. Thoughts?
Magic.
Wow!
Yeah.
He did it again.
Yeah, that's Scott Smith's MO to basically just get his ass handed to him for an entire fight and then pull out a knockout at the last second.
Which I believe Homer Simpson made that technique popular, I believe. Absorbing as much damage as possible.
Absolutely.
Until the opponent tires.
But this is no hobo fight. This is Kung Lee coming off of, well, some movies, so I guess he had lots of time to train and look cool for those, right?
Yeah, well, and also, you know, fatigue was not a factor in this. It's not that he got tired from kicking so much ass and then put his hands down. He was still busting out those awesome spinning back kicks and just got caught with half a round left to go.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you could tell he was breathing laboriously for sure, but not like he was sluggish around the ring, even in that third round right before he got, punched repeatedly in the face. He was still throwing the kicks. I think it was just more of a style thing where he wasn't, he wasn't putting up a bad defense. But yeah, like Greg mentioned, he did get caught. And, I ended up rewatching the fight because I had that much free time. And you really saw in that third round, Scott Smith was really working the right a lot, leading up to that exchange where he finally caught Kung Lee when he faked the right and then caught him with a little left hook, I believe.
So was that a strategy? I mean, obviously, that's a strategy
on his
part.
I would hope so. I mean,
but why wouldn't a part of his strategy not being, well, not to get kicked by those spinning back kicks constantly? What, 6-7 times?
Yeah, and knocked down many times and, you know, badly in that first round. I mean, easily score that a 10-8 round just on how one-sided it was. But, a lot can be said for Kung Lee's, it's kind of cliche to say at this point, but he's an unorthodox striker in that you don't see a lot of those kicks and such used in MMA, and there might be a reason for that, but at the same time, most people probably don't train a lot to defend that, and, Scott Smith obviously was able to absorb those kicks, and
was it more getting off balance than the kicks hurting?
You know, I think it was. I mean, there was the one point where Kung Lee got Smith down and was able to land some hammer fists on him. Was maybe the one time I thought Smith might have been hurt, but a lot of it times it was really looked. There was one where Smith was clearly off balance. He was already backing up, and it just caught him as he was rocking back on his feet. So, you know, but who really knows besides Scott Smith at this point how badly those kicks hurt? But they clearly were, winning Kung Lee the fight on points at least, and giving him an advantage when it came to reach and that sort of thing. But.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It looked that Scott Smith is a lot more durable than previous opponents of Kung Lee because he was taking everything he had and he was getting knocked around. Every time he busted out that kick, you know, Scott Smith would go flying back into the cage and, you know, sometimes he'd go down, sometimes he wouldn't. Kung Lee did unleash a lot of ground and pound after that first time, but it also didn't seem to be the most effective. He landed a lot of hammer fists, but they didn't look like they had a whole lot of power on them, and as soon as he did start landing a few power shots, Scott Smith decided to get back up.
Yeah, and I thought it was nice. Big John McCarthy was reffing that, and he was one of the best in the business right now, and he was very clear in talking to Scott Smith, like, hey, you got to do something. I'm going to stop the fight, you know, and I really appreciate that when the referees verbalize to the combatants what they need to do, you know, if you wanted this fight to continue, you need to do something other than turtle, which, you know, even if you're not taking damage in a turtle position, you need to be trying to advance your position or defend more intelligently than that. But yeah, no, I thought that was good refereeing, and clearly both men were very uncomfortable on the ground. Scott Smith didn't even take guard the first time he got knocked down, and then when he did one of the other knockdowns, he was able to hold guard, and Kung Lee clearly didn't know what to do other than try to choke him, which...
Yeah, it looked like he was going for the strangle choke.
Out of 80s movie killing.
Yeah, it was just hands around the neck, not arms, like, you know, what we think of as a choke. It was the straight-up hand-around-the-neck choke, and you know, he's lucky he didn't get arm-barred for that. It's a terrible idea.
Yeah, and, I mean, Scott Smith has never been known for his ground game, but he is, I'd say, more well-trained as a overall... I guess, well-rounded mixed martial artist than Kung Lee, so I was kind of surprised that he didn't have more to offer on the ground, even if it would have been something basic, but obviously he's not known for that and clearly doesn't need a solid ground game to pick up a win here and there, and once again, another dramatic come-from-behind victory for Scott Smith. So.
And Kung Lee isn't going to be around for a while now, is he?
Well, he'll have a medical suspension, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, he's also going back to movies. The whole reason this fight took place was because he was going to be in a movie, and the production got pushed back, so he had some free time on his schedule. But he's going to go back in that movie, and after a fight like that, you know, he might not be back for a while.
Yeah, his face was pretty well rearranged.
That was a nice looking nose.
Yeah, he was a lot less pretty after the fight than he was before it. Scott Smith, though, still looking great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Scott Smith is a fun fighter to watch, and it's one of those, I don't want to take anything away from his victory because it was great, and, you know, I had my fist pumping in the air because it's just like, no matter who's fighting, it's always just such an amazing thing to see a guy, you know, a minute and a half from defeat or quicker if he had ended up, you know, getting KO'd or something like that. But to just pull it out like that was great. But at the same time, I almost turned that fight off in the second round because it was painful for me to watch. It was just like Scott Smith was not doing anything to counter anything that Lee had to offer. He wasn't doing anything about the kicks. And yeah, he was absorbing it, but that doesn't seem like a fun or, I guess, a strategy that's going to get you far in the sport, I guess.
Just where Palmer Simpson would go.
Exactly.
Back when he was boxing the homeless people, he would just get punched and punched and punched until the other guy wears out. So that's not a strategy, per se.
Well, I don't think he was trying to
get
kicked.
No.
I mean, it's not like that was his game plan. I'm sure his game plan was knock him out in the first round, and his plan B was knock him out in the second round, and he ended up going with his plan C, which was to knock him out in the third round.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like he's, you know, just going to absorb kicks and absorb kicks and absorb kicks because that's what he wants. He absorbed the kicks because he's not as good as Kung Lee. That said, he's got the knockout power, and, I mean, you could say he's better than Kung Lee because... You know, if it was a fight to the death, he'd be the guy who is alive right now. He is the guy who won the fight. But in terms of skills, in terms of points, they showed the stats after the fight, and Kung Lee outstruck him so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's indicative that Kung Lee is technically a far superior fighter.
Yeah, I mean, striking-wise, for sure, and power is always the one that comes into the equation, and of course, there's always the, you can land 100 strikes, but obviously for Smith, he only needed, what, 4?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, but, you know, who knows, if they did that fight again, it could play out completely differently, so it's always hard to say, but, you know, watching other fights Scott Smith's been involved in, he is one who, you know, again, I don't think it's part of his strategy, but he is willing to absorb a couple blows to land one of his shots. You know, you saw it... 2 fights with Robbie Lawler, and I believe his last win was over Benji Raddick.
Yeah,
and it was the same type of deal where he was taking a lot of shots before he was able to land the one that ended the fight. So
and that one against Pete Sell also, where he took the body shot from hell and looked like he was about to go down before doing one last lunging shot and knocking him out. So that's definitely his thing. He likes to come back. He's got kind of the juggernaut style in that I'm gonna take everything you got and keep coming forward and. Even if you land outstrike me 10-1, if I get my one in, hopefully it'll work.
Right, which is, you know, might not be the most interesting from a technical standpoint, but man, it's very fun to watch. That was one of the most entertaining fights of that night for me, at least, just because of the surprising win, you know.
And you were saying you were looking at turning the TV off at that point. To me, that tells me that he can be down. 4 rounds, say it was a championship fight, but I'm still going to watch that 5th round because who knows?
Oh, exactly, and that's part of his appeal now. If it wasn't even, you know, before, clearly, you know, watching Scott Smith, because people always say it, it's an MMA fight, anything can happen, but, you know, how often does that really happen? You know, how often does someone, you know, beat a guy for 90% of the fight only to lose it that quickly? It's not as often as people think. But I mean, Scott Smith really, that's his gimmick now, and it's great. People are gonna watch that, even if he's not fighting top tier competition. He's always kind of got that to rest on, and it's good. I think people will pay a lot of attention to him for that.
You're inside the Audio Choke as we run down Strike Force Evolution. We're on Twitter at Audio Choke, and please leave a comment or get on the forum. We'd love to have a discussion with you as well. Going to the lightweight championship, Gilbert Melendez against Josh Thompson. Unanimous decision after five rounds. Of course, the victor being Gilbert Melendez.
That was probably the fight of the night, in my opinion.
Easily, yes.
Technically speaking, it was hands down above all the other ones. The Jacare-Matt Lindland fight was fairly technical also, but this fight, you know, it had two guys who were standing and throwing. There were a few times where they got into some pretty wild brawls, but for the most part, it was something good to watch. It was fast-paced. It was kind of sad that Josh Thompson managed to get both kicked in the balls and poked in the eye through the course of the fight, but I don't think that really affected the fight too much. He won the first round, but pretty decisively lost rounds 2 through 5.
Yeah, no, that was a very good fight, and I believe described several times throughout the course of the fight by the announcers as, you know, they devolve into kind of rock 'em, sock 'em robot antics, which it's easy to lose, but there was some very clear technical aspects or game plans being implemented there. We saw Melendez using his jab a lot to kind of set up other moves, and even when they were throwing like two wild and crazy guys, you know, they were kind of picking their shots almost in between, basically slap fighting at times. But you know, even when it's not technically amazing, those sustained pace fights are really great, and they really managed to keep up that pace for five rounds. And easily the match of the night, and I'd say it's probably going to be at a lot of people's lists for you know, who knows, maybe match of the year or something like that. But just that level of excitement and the level of I don't know, the abilities that they kept up throughout the entire fight.
I also thought it was fun. Melendez got that one knockdown in the second, but for the most part, every time they tried to take it to the ground, the two guys wrestling negated each other, and they didn't let that happen. Every time Thompson went for a takedown towards the end, he knew he was behind. He was trying to alter his plan, I think, and Melendez wasn't letting that happen. And Melendez went for a takedown or two early on, and Thompson stuffed him. So that was kind of fun, I thought. This is a fight that I think pretty much everyone is going to demand the rubber match.
Yeah, that's they were alluding to that as soon as the fight was over, and well, except for the fighters, who knows if they want to fight each other. After that, who knows if they ever want to fight again. But yeah, clearly much better than the first one where I believe Thompson won every round in their first fight. And
on every scorecard.
Yeah, so this one much better overall, a lot more competitive it seems, and you know, who knows, maybe later on down the line in 2010 or even later, they'll have that rubber match after they've, you know, I'd prefer, you know, when you have a rubber match, to have another opponent or two in between than doing an immediate, unless it was a very controversial decision or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, this one was definitely a lot more competitive. It was clear to everyone who the winner was. It wasn't that competitive.
Right.
But, you know, it was a good fight, and it wasn't just a one-sided ass-kicking. It was, both guys were getting them. Both guys were taking. I'm sure they're both looking pretty ugly right about now.
Yeah, but it wasn't BJ Penn versus Diego Sanchez.
No, most certainly not.
Well, a arm triangle choke helped Ronaldo Souza take out Matt Lindland in 418 of round number one.
Yeah, Jacare's first Strikeforce fight, and I think he made quite an impression.
Yeah, he beat Matt Lindland, who is not really on a roll right now, but was one of the biggest names in the middle of the decade. He was pretty much number one to number three, depending on who you talk to, middleweight in the world at the time that the UFC happened to not have a middleweight championship. And then when they did have one, when Rich Franklin got the title, Matt Lindland kind of disappeared.
Yeah, there's all kinds of good stories behind that for sure.
Yeah, I agree with Dana White on a lot of things, but I think he did Lindland wrong on that one.
Yeah,
he ended up firing him for a T-shirt that he wore, I think it was after one of his fights. But you know, he's a top guy. He's an Olympic wrestler, not the most exciting guy. He was, however, the first man to ever knock out Jeremy Horn in like 100 fights.
Yeah, Jeremy Horn, the MMA journeyman.
And, you know, he comes in here and he fights Jacare and he gets tapped out in the first round. He looked like he was going for a triangle choke at one point, which I thought was pretty funny because, I mean, I'm sure he's confident in his jiu-jitsu. He's been training it long enough, but you're going against a world champion. That's probably not the best idea there.
Yeah, Lindland's known more for his ground and pound kind of a wear you down style. But, you know, for that, those couple minutes they were fine, it was very good. I mean, that's the type of ground game that I think, you know, a lot of people who are new to the sport don't appreciate the ground game as much because it's really just, you know, oh, it's two guys laying on each other. But when you see something like that where they're constantly moving and rolling around and working for different positions and going for submissions, that sort of thing, that's the exciting kind of ground game that can really get people interested in that aspect of the sport.
Yeah, also, I like that Jacare had him in an omoplata that looked really tight. That's one of the submissions that you don't really see a whole lot, and I thought he was going to tap him out with that one.
Break his arm off, something like that? Yeah,
dislocate his shoulder, but he got out of it and scrambled and went for some more submissions. That was a fun one. That was, like I said, that was also a pretty technical fight as opposed to the other fights that we had seen that were pretty much some slugfests.
Like the slobber knocker of King Mo and Mike Whitehead.
Yes.
Woo! Ending in 3 minutes and 8 seconds of the first round. Mo money, Mo punches, Mo problems, Mo rock star.
That's right. Mike Whitehead was a pretty big surprise in the weigh-ins. He's a guy who's fought at 205 a handful of times and came in at a nice full 264 pounds for this one. He took a fight at heavyweight, and he took that heavyweight title seriously. He's packed on a lot of pounds. I don't know if he's ever going to move back down in weight after that.
Yeah, it's I can't imagine this fight will serve as good motivation for him to move to a different weight class. Well, who knows? I mean, sometimes you can learn more from a loss than a win. But he did not look great. He was able to kind of keep King Mo at a distance for a little bit with the leg kicks, but he. You know, he was not defending himself well when he was throwing those kicks, and it ended up costing him badly when he got socked directly in the face by a right hand.
So yeah.
I did like, King Mo had the was rocking the unorthodox style a little bit, I think, was part of that to kind of use to bait Mike Whitehead in to maybe exchanging with him. Or over-committing to the punches. But, you know, overall, I kind of prefer more traditional fighter stances, but, it, you know, it worked for that fight, and it's always interesting when they throw in something a little more unusual. You know, he basically had his hands down for much of the fight and was kind of had a low stance and was, you know, letting Mike Whitehead take shots at him, so...
Well, that works when you're not afraid of getting knocked out.
Exactly.
There are times where it comes to bite you in the ass later on, like Crow Cop and Kevin Randleman, for example, where you're worried about the sprawl, thinking, oh, this guy's not going to knock me out, and yep. You get knocked out. But if you're fighting a guy who's not known for power, and you've got it, and you're trying to bait him, it works out. I mean, it obviously worked out for him in this fight, and there's other cases where it's worked out okay, I think. Sometimes... It can be better to keep your hands down. It can definitely work for defending against grappling.
Mm-hmm. Which is what Mola Wall is actually more known for, which I think, I believe that was one of the, before the announcer was talking about, like, if Mola Wall was going to win the fight, one of the things he was going to want to do is go for a takedown, that sort of thing, because he has a good takedown and wrestling base and good ground and pound, but he's got some improved striking now, and I don't think Mike Whitehead was prepared for the to take a shot like that, obviously, because he did not take it well. But so it's good to see Mola Wall's first major fight here in the U.S. Not sure if it's his first fight overall in the U.S., but he fought some in Japan. And
he's absolutely willing to do endorsements. All you have to do is ask him.
Yeah. And he says he's a money weight, so that's good, right?
Absolutely. He will fight wherever you want him to.
Wherever the money is. Antoine Britt, right? And Scott Lightly.
Yep, those are one of the prelim fights. But just go ahead, since we didn't get to see any of the prelims, so I'm kind of like about Strike Force.
Yeah, that was a little buoy, wasn't it?
Right, because they did have extra time at the end, but, you know, it's their call.
Yeah, that's one thing that kind of bugs me about Strike Force is that they don't really show the prelims. And they even cut a fight off the main card on this one. There was supposed to be Robbie Lawler fighting Trevor Prangley, and that fight got dropped. So there's really not a whole lot of excuse unless they moved up one of their other fights, but I don't think that's the case. I think they originally had 5 fights, and move down to four.
Right, it would be pretty easy to just bump up one of the ones that was on the preliminary card and just put it in there, you know? But
I've always been a fan of the way UFC does it, where they've got their main card, which is what they'll show you if they don't have any extra time. But if they do have time, they'll go in kind of an order of excitement. Like, this fight, well, we've only got 5 minutes, so we'll show this really exciting 5-minute fight. Or if they've got, 15 minutes, they can either show that fight that went to the distance that was exciting, or they can show this short fight and this short fight if they were both more exciting. Because, I mean, it's not like we paid for it. It was free. It was on, yeah, if you have Showtime.
Yes.
But, you didn't pay specifically for this event necessarily, but it'd still be nice to see them. They happened. They paid people to fight, so why not get their money's worth and show it?
Right, and another thing, I mean, just from a promotional standpoint, if you want to build a promotion and have, more fighters visible and, build their names, putting them on TV is a great way to do that. I mean, granted, the, 60 or, however many thousand, I think it was, looks like it's about 8,000 or so people there will know who fought, and they'll be like, oh yeah, that guy had a great knockout, but if we don't see it on TV, we're not going to be any wiser about who this fighter is necessarily, or people who just tuned in, and they won't have any name recognition later on, which is what promotions need to do, is be able to promote fighters.
You're inside the Audio Choke. Of course, thank you, MMATorch.com, for letting us be on here. WEC 45, Cerrone Ratcliffe Tobin.
Yes, I watched that. It was good stuff. It was going on, I think in some parts of the country, at the same time as the Strike Force card. We had one or both of the events tape delayed up here, so not necessarily as big of a problem, but DVRs were set for both. The main event, Cerrone versus Ratcliffe, was an exciting fight. Interesting, you had mentioned, Greg, regarding the Thompson-Melendez fight for Strikeforce, that it was unfortunate Thompson got both hit in the groin and eye poked. Donald Cerrone clearly won the fight and such, but he came very close to self-destructing in the ring. He hit Ed Ratcliffe 3 separate times with knees to the groin and lost points in 2 rounds because of it.
Yeah, so he could have lost the decision.
Yeah, luckily he finished him in the 3rd round, and it wasn't a problem. And they weren't, I mean, you never know, but they did not appear to be deliberate. I mean, he didn't, have a mischievous look on his face after the fact. And it really did appear, the commentators were mentioning it, that Ratcliffe, one was the size disparity, so, you're going to have to adjust for when you're throwing knees to the body, that sort of thing. But Ratcliffe seemed to be moving into the knee to kind of, absorb the blow before it was able to reach its full potential. Unfortunately, it happened to be being absorbed into his nether regions. and good for Ratcliffe for being able to continue the fight. Even with a cup on, I can't imagine 3 knees to the groin would feel good at all, ever. So, good on him. It was an entertaining fight, and, interesting to see. Cerrone really did, aside from maybe the first couple minutes or so where he got popped a couple times, really did have a lot to offer in the fight, and Ratcliffe didn't have much in the way of answering. They did get into a few good exchanges, but it was just interesting to see Cerrone, who's a very good fighter, but he had those penalties, and he also got in trouble for grabbing the cage at one point, which he used to get the mount, I believe, on Ratcliffe. So for someone as experienced as Cerrone to still be getting caught with stuff like that, I mean, it happens to everyone, so you can't really fault him, but it was just kind of surprising to see. Literally, he could have lost the fight after clearly dominating Ratcliffe, had it gone to a decision or such, because of mistakes and penalties, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that happened to Nate Marquardt a few years ago when he fought Talis Ladies, where he clearly won the fight 29-28, except he had 2 points taken away. So he ended up losing 28-27. He attempted a pile driver. There was an elbow to the back of the head. That was a pretty dirty fight.
But everyone loves a pile driver.
Yeah. Clearly against the rules, though.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah. But yeah. Luckily, Cerrone was able to pull out a rear naked choke with a body triangle included, I believe, on Ratcliffe in the 3rd round.
Nice.
At 3:47.
Yes.
Also, Dana White on Twitter was talking some smack about Steve Mazzagatti
Steve Mazzagatti
was not happy with a call that he made.
Did he happen to say I don't follow Dana White on Twitter, but what did he mention the specific fight?
He didn't mention the specific fight, and I didn't see the show because I was watching the Strikeforce event. But he said that he wants to get rid of Mazzagatti.
He's had some issues with Mazzagatti for a while now. I believe he's called him the worst referee in the sport, which is maybe a bit harsh.
Yeah,
harsh perhaps.
Dana White has said that he is not even qualified to watch MMA, let alone referee it, which that one's a bit harsh, I think.
Right, I mean, certainly we won't... Steve Mazzagatti has made some questionable calls, but, I mean, he's not...
He doesn't seem to be completely incompetent.
No, he's made some good calls. He's made some bad calls. Definitely not the worst ref there is, I don't think.
All right. So I'm guessing that probably wasn't one of the fights on the main card then.
You know, I'm trying to think now. I'm going to have to kind of look through and see who the ref was on each of the fights. Because there were a couple, you know, the one kind of, at least one controversial stoppage was Joseph Benavidez versus Ronnie Yaya. But that was not Steve Mazzagatti refereeing. There's a female ref, and, you know, there's a...
Good for her.
Exactly, right? Yeah, you know, not like it's...
Until she screws up, I guess.
Right. But it not like that makes any difference whatsoever, but it's just not something you're used to seeing, and, you know, there's always the idea of, like, well, I mean, a lot of the male refs are very large guys, former fighters, that sort of thing, and they can get in between two fighters if something happens, and who knows, you know, it wasn't a problem, but the Ronnie Yaya-Joseph Benavidez fight... Joseph Benavidez won with TKO punches in the first. And Ronnie Yaya, you know, he went down and he was taking a few hits, but he didn't, he was still moving. He still had his hands going a bit. And it's one of those things you're like, well, it was either that punch or the next one that might have ended it. And so you can't really fault the ref too bad for that because, you know, if you stop it too soon, it's one thing. But if you're like, hey, you let an unconscious guy get hit three times in the face, then you made a bad call also. So it's always tough. I don't think it was a horrendous call, but maybe a smidge too soon, but who knows?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to complain about stoppages like that where there's a guy on his back and he's taking punches, or when he's on his stomach and he's taking punches, and there's a lot of punches, and, you know, he's not unconscious, but the rule doesn't state that you have to be unconscious. It says you have to be defending yourself intelligently. And, you know, you can be keeping your arms up, but if you're taking shot after shot after shot, then I think it's, you know, it's a good idea to stop the fight. It becomes that point, however, which shot is it, like you were saying?
Yeah.
Do you wait till you see the eyes roll in the back of the head? Sometimes. Sometimes that's not a good idea, because, you know, some people have a chin that may be too good for their own good. And you don't want to see somebody just taking too many shots and getting brain damage just because they're hard to get knocked out.
Yeah. Speaking of which, jumping really back to strike, quick back to strike for someone good.
And the Scott Smith Kung Lee fight, I do believe.
No? Well, there's that, but I was just going to say, I really appreciate it. It might be a little gimmicky. I like the ref cam.
Yes, we were talking about that.
Because you can see, the best example I saw was the Mike Whitehead Mo LaWall fight, where you see exactly what the ref's seeing, and Mike Whitehead is clearly not there after absorbing several punches on the ground. His eyes are off in a far-off distant world and land.
And they didn't overuse it either. They just, whenever...
It was just like the end of the fight, usually.
Strike Force's editing is a little slow sometimes, you know, but they're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not the multi-million-dollar empire that Zuffa is, so you're always going to have that between different organizations. But, you know, that's one thing that kind of offered that. You know, I don't know if it's better, but it's at least interesting for me, at least. But you were going to mention some of it.
Well, I wasn't
going
to mention anything. I was saying no, but yeah to, well, we had gone from brain damage, and then you had mentioned earlier about Scott Smith perhaps in the future because of the beating that he took, and blah, 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 didn't really turn out all that well.
Well, that kind of brings to another point where some fighters are known for taking punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So then that kind of puts referees in a bad spot. Guys like Scott Smith, guys like Nogueira,
yeah,
who are known for having great chins. It's like, how much abuse do you let this guy take because of his history? Because Nogueira took a lot of shots from Fedor. Clearly, he's able to not get knocked out easily. But does that mean you should just let him take shot after shot after shot because he's Nogueira? Or should you stop the fight the same way you would with somebody else? Scott Smith also fits in that category where he is not easy to knock out, obviously. He can take a good shot. he wasn't really taking him on the chin too much this fight. But
there was a lot of body shots, yeah.
Yeah, he was getting worked over, and he was getting beat up. That part where he was getting ground and pounded in the first, I wouldn't have stopped it if I was a ref, but I've seen refs stop for things like that. But he's known as a durable guy, so he managed to get out. I don't know if it would have necessarily been stopped if it was someone else, but sometimes fighters can get the benefit of the doubt because of that.
Yeah. Getting back to the WEC, I was able to look up some of the fight recaps here online. Mazzagatti did referee the Anthony Njokuanu. Wow, I just totally butchered his name, and I told Matt how to say it earlier, which is horrible.
Njokuanu?
Anthony Njokuanu versus Chris Horodesky. Mazzagatti did referee that fight, and that fight, that might be the fight Dana was talking about. That's a highlight reel fight for sure. By the way, if anyone hasn't seen that, definitely try and find that online. Or, you know, the WEC replay, I believe. They replay their fights. But the fight ended in the first round when there was a, you know, exchange, and Njokuanu had Horodesky down. There's a scramble. And to clear space, Horodesky might have ran away, which... not that there's necessarily a valuable defense in the runaway strategy, but I understand in a fight having space, being able to reset is an important thing. So I won't necessarily fault a fighter for backing up quickly or even running away as long as they're not like running circles around the ring for an extended amount of time. Mm-hmm. But Horodesky made a very bad mistake in that he completely turned his back to Njokuanu and did not really seem to be aware of the fact that Njokuanu was still pursuing him, didn't have his hands ready for any sort of defense, and was blasted in the face from behind, mind you, with a head kick that knocked him down. It looked like he might have done some damage to his eye. He kind of went for a cover there, but was still a bit defending himself, kicking and throwing with his other hand. And then there was a few more punches landed on the ground before Mazzagatti stopped it. So that could have been it, because it looked like maybe... Horodesky had injured his eye at that point. So that might be it. The Mazzagatti fight that Dana White took offense to.
That could be. That sounds a lot like the ending to Eves Edwards against Josh Thompson.
Hmm.
With the fighter running away, taking the head kick to the face. And
yeah.
Josh Thompson, when that happened to him, he actually took several unanswered blows to the face when he was clearly unconscious.
Yeah, this one, you know, it didn't seem as bad to me. I don't think Horodesky went out immediately. He wasn't, like, laying there prone without his hands up. But he was clearly not going to, you know, I don't think he was going to recover from that. And it's unfortunate because Hordesky's not a bad fighter. He just made a bad mistake, and he's going to be on highlight reels forever now.
Yeah. There's some talk of him after that fight going down a weight class.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that was very clear in that fight is, one part of it was height. He was much smaller than Njokuanu. As far as... you know, overall weight comes in, it's hard to say, but he just looks like a smaller fighter. I wouldn't think it would be a bad idea for him to go down a weight class.
Lightweight
fight, so yeah, he could go down to
145.
145, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea for sure, and it was only his first fight in WEC, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bigger guys than him at 155, and it's something to consider for sure. But
you're inside the audio choke, and hey! We're on Facebook at Audio Choke. UFC 108, January 2nd at the MGM Grand. We can just touch on this real quick.
Yeah, this fight, or this card, I should say, it's the card that has been completely ravaged by injury, illness, what have you. I think it still looks like a pretty fun card, but it doesn't really have the name power. It's got...
Silva and Rashad Evans.
Yeah, that one, that's the big, you know, name value. But there's Dustin Hazlett is fighting Paul Daly. I'm a big fan of Dustin. He likes to go for all kinds of crazy submissions. He's talking about how he wants to take the record for Submission of the Night Awards from the UFC. And he's well on his way doing that. He fought Tandem McCroy a while back, and he caught him with like a crazy reverse armbar thing that I hadn't even ever seen before. And Paul Daly was put up against Martin Kampmann in his UFC debut a few months back. He was supposed to be getting his butt kicked so that Martin Kampmann could get the title shot against George St. Pierre, but he went in there and he knocked him out, kind of. they say that it was kind of an early stoppage, and I'm inclined to agree. He didn't really have him knocked down. It was one of those standing knockouts, and he had him dazed. He had him up against the cage, and he was punching at him, but I think that was a little premature stoppage. But either way, he's a good striker. It looks like he hits hard, and he's fighting a really good guy on the ground, so that should be a fun fight, I think.
Yeah, the one knock against Paul Daly is he doesn't have a great ground game at all. Jake Shields, back in the Elite XC days, I believe, was able to work the ground pretty solidly against him. But, you know, he's had some time to train on that. Hopefully he's become a little more well-rounded. It's always nice to see, you know, he's a very good striker, but that can only take you so far, you know. I mean, eventually you're going to run into a guy who will be able to take you down, avoid your strikes, that sort of thing. But so we'll see how it pans out. But he's a very exciting fighter to watch, for sure. And, yeah, I mean, this card, like I said, not a lot of name value, but should be some solid fights on there. I believe Jim Miller is now fighting Dwayne Ludwig, who I believe that's been... That fight, I believe, has had two injuries on it. I'm trying to remember. Sean Sherk was scheduled at one point to fight on there. I'm trying to remember who the other fight was also... Tyson Griffin. Was scheduled to fight before Jim Miller versus Tyson Griffin. Griffin had to pull out. Shirk came in. Shirk got injured. And so now it is Dwayne Ludwig.
Also, both Joe and Dan Lozon will be fighting on this card. The brothers are going to be going at it against Sam Stout and... Who is Dan Miller fighting? Does it say there? Yeah, Cole Miller. So
that should be a good fight.
Yeah, those should both be pretty fun fights, I think. And the one that I'm looking forward to also is Junior Dos Santos against Gilbert Ivel. I said before, not a fan of Gilbert Ivel. I'm not really happy that he's in the UFC, even though he is an exciting fighter. So I'm hoping he gets blasted out here.
Yeah, he had a history of, you know, perhaps some illegal moves from time to time. Made him not the most popular fighter. He is, you know... When he's not using such moves, he's still a solid fighter, and it should be a good test for Junior Dos Santos. Should be a fun fight.
Well, we'll poke at this card a little bit more next week, and Merry Christmas, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and a big props to Frank Shamrock. What a cool guy he is.
Yeah, Frank Shamrock is the man, best announcer in the world.
Yep, sorry, Joe.
Yeah, you're funny, but Frank Shamrock is the bomb.
Now, Joe, if you choose to follow us at Twitter or on Twitter at Audio Choke, then you can come back. But Frank was cool enough to add us. Yay!
Well, it's just sacrificing our journalistic integrity right there.
Hey, I don't care.
Yeah.
You can't go into the search button and, you know, look up MMA Twitters. You know, you had to find us.
And if any other professional fighters out there would like to follow us, please do, because that'll make us feel really good about ourselves.
And Tobin will, too. He'll just pretend like, you know, he's got perfect
reading. Pretend like I'm above it. And we'll don't get excited about these things.
All right. I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. It's been the Audio Choke. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Audio Choke.
I feel kind of weird with no, like, random news articles for us to talk about.
Yeah, I'm trying to... I mean, I think the best one I saw was that Mola Wall actually got fined for his post-ring celebration.
Did he really?
King
Mo? When he did the Stone Cold with the Rockstar energy drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got fined 10% of his win bonus, I believe.
Nice.
Which is excellent.
Way to go, Mo.
Yeah, good job, Mo.
Just always have him fight last, apparently. So
he's going to make a mess.
Spill whatever fluids he feels.
He's going to bring out some fake blood next time. A Mo.
Yeah, like it is like Rockstar energy drink that much worse than pools of blood on the...
I think it's probably worse, actually.
Yeah, blood's really not sticky.
Fake blood, maybe.
Yeah, right.
That, you know, that was clearly intentional. People are not bleeding all over the place on accident.
That's cool, and that's obviously what Josh Thompson slipped on that one time. I don't know.
Sorry, so it was affecting title fights later on.
Yeah, but he won decisively, so we can't fault him too much.
Okay.
I love that, man. He's like, he's doing Stone Cold.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to do that with some rock star energy drinks? There's a shower in the back. Just hose off afterwards.
And Mayhem Miller was in his corner. So what do you expect?
Yeah.
Ha 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 ha
Did you see the hip-hop one yet, Matt?
No, I don't think so.
There's this one that I saw with Mayhem, and, like, there's this loud hip-hop music going on, and some guy just goes out there and starts breakdancing in front of the entrance. And then Mayhem walks out behind that guy, like, and he, like, steps on that guy's back, and starts going, throwing, like, handfuls of money in the audience.
That's awesome. Mayhem Miller's my new hero.
Yeah. Well, the thing that makes me sad is Mo LaWald has similar. He does. He also does weird entrances. Like he comes out with like wearing a crown and with like four or five attractive females.
Mm-hmm.
Showtime's like, no, we're not going to show that. We don't want to. We don't want to like give this guy more attention.
Yeah.
God forbid we make a star out of somebody.